Okay, Liz, here's some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, multiple systems, delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs, you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and you improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors.
Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hollywood. netsuite.com/Hollywood. netsuite.com/Hollywood.
So are we taking the 134 to get there?
I don't think the 134 connects to the 101 going this way. I think we have to take that weird zig around Warner Brothers.
Oh, so. Oh God, it's going to be totally backed up.
Probably. LA traffic.
Hi, and welcome to Happier in Hollywood, the podcast about how to be happier, healthier, saner, more creative, more successful, and more productive in a backbiting, superficial, chaotic, unpredictable, fundamentally insane world. I'm Liz Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA, and with me is my high school friend and writing partner of 18 years, Sarah.
That's me, Sarah Fain. On this podcast, we talk about being writers in Hollywood, how we balance a career and friendship, and how to survive the war of attrition that is life in Los Angeles.
In this episode, we'll discuss whether it's better to learn from failure or from success.
I know which one I would rather learn from.
Guessing it's not failure.
Definitely not.
And then, Sarah, you have a jewelry-related take a hike that helps you through stressful times.
Yes, and then our Hollywood hack is sort of jewelry-related, too. This is a very blingy episode.
But before we dive in, let's talk about an email we got from a listener named Serena. She wrote, on a couple of episodes, you've spoken about fertility and encouraged young women to just go for it and have kids early if that's what they know they'll eventually want. Many women in their 20s and early 30s are simply not ready to become parents. They don't have the financial or emotional means to raise a child or have legitimate concerns about their career suffering. I am 27 myself, and while I do not plan to have a child, I know many of my friends, particularly female, are struggling with these issues. Not everyone who listens to the podcast is in the position that perhaps you were at that age, and speaking of these issues without making space for the nuances can lead to women feeling panicked and considering having a child before they're ready, or feeling even more conflicted and guilty about their desire to wait. There is no easy answer here, but I wonder whether what we should be doing is changing the narrative a little to force change that would make these choices so much less fraught. Government help for parents in the form of free childcare, paid parental leave, emotional support, etc. is the only way I can see to solve this issue, as well as proper equal pay laws and parental leave for both slash either parent to stop women from shouldering the majority of the burden. In short, I think we need to be really careful about adding to the pressure to the double standards women already deal with in a world where their value is very much based on their ability and willingness to procreate, yet they are judged based on their professional success.
Yes.
Okay. Well, she said a lot there.
She made some really excellent points. And I think on the whole, we agree with her.
Yes, people, I think all those things should happen.
Yes, exactly. And people really are struggling when it comes to making decisions about their fertility. But that is why we talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, our thing is, we know that so many of these factors go into the decision making, feeling like you want to be farther along in your career, feeling like you, you know, want more time to develop personally. And our point is just that don't think that there isn't a biological clock.
Right.
We're not telling you what to do. We just want people to understand that it's not the case that, oh, you can have a baby easily when you're 45.
Right.
I think I was truly, Sarah, under the impression that, okay, well, if I wait to have a second baby until my, you know, I'm into my 40s, I'm going to have to do IVF. You know, that's going to be a pain. Expensive, but if I have the money to do that and I'm willing to do it, then, you know, I'll be able to have that baby.
Right.
And, you know, that didn't happen for me.
Right.
I did all the treatments. I spent the money. God, I spent a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it just didn't happen.
Right.
And so what we want people to know is that nature isn't necessarily on your side.
Right. And we're not telling anybody to have babies in their 20s if they're not ready. We're not even telling people to have babies in their 30s if they're not ready.
Right.
We're just saying you have to be aware of this biological imperative. And if you want to have kids, even if it's not pleasant and even if it's stressful, these are things you have to think about.
And if you have the means and you actually have a partner that you know you want to have kids with, I mean, if you just put embryos on ice...
Yeah.
Geez, that opens up the possibilities. I mean,
right.
If I could have done one thing, that's what I wish I had done.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can carry a baby much more easily than you can make that healthy egg. It's the healthy eggs that are really the problem.
Yes. And Serena's right that there are consequences for women
yes.
who have kids at a younger age. There was a discussion on our Facebook group from a woman who's a scientist who said in a conversation with a male scientist at work, this male scientist who claimed to be a feminist, said that women are liabilities and risks because we have babies. Like, this is not a small thing to consider.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that, and it's really messed up.
Yeah, and hopefully in this new age with Time's Up,
one
of the things that's going to come to, you know, forth
yes.
is that women are not going to be discriminated against because they get pregnant.
Right.
Now, you know, another point I want to make is that this sort of what I don't want to say fiction, that's too strong a word, but this notion that it's you can, as long as you have the money,
right.
you can get pregnant in your 40s
right.
through medicine, mm-hmm. science. The fact that people think that, I think, adds to bosses thinking women should wait to have kids.
Agree.
You know,
yes.
until they're further along in their uh-huh. career. Sarah, I will remind you, we have been at events
yes.
where successful women writers have stated they don't think a woman should have a child until she's an executive producer.
Which is madness.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine if you become an executive producer at 26.
Right.
That doesn't happen very often.
We didn't even move here till we were 27.
28 for me.
Okay.
So, you know,
yeah.
It's such a complicated issue. And our point is we've spent a lot of time talking about this and thinking about it. And we want other people to as well, because my doctor did tell me, by the way, Liz, don't think you're just going to be able to get pregnant. If you want to do it, you better do it.
But a lot of doctors don't, or they present it as, well, the chances are small, but keep trying, you know?
Yeah. And again, I mean, this is expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, how much did you spend to get pregnant?
Over 2 years, and now factor in I was paying for sperm. If you have a husband, you get that free. But I think I spent like $70,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know
treatments.
It was that much.
It was a lot.
Now, I think I spent around $30,000. I mean, maybe it was a lot more than that. But
you just blocked it out.
Yeah. Well, the medicine, I mean, the meds you have to take, you're spending every time you go to the pharmacy at least $1,500.
Oh, I thought you were going to say $5,000.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. I spent less than I would have because I could never even get to implantation because
right.
I could never get one decent egg.
Right.
So,
and how old were you when this was going on?
42.
Right.
42 to 44 or 41 to 43, something like that. And after 2 years, I just said, you know.
Forget it.
Forget it.
Yeah.
I mean, rightly so, I think.
Yeah. Because it's brutal. It's emotionally brutal.
Yeah. And luckily, I had a child. So I think emotionally for me, it was a lot less draining because I knew at the end of the day, like I had a family. So that really did lower the stakes. Nonetheless, it was not a happy time.
Yeah. So if you think you want kids, even if you're ambivalent, you know what we're going to say.
Freeze your eggs.
Freeze your eggs.
If you have the means.
Those are our words of wisdom. Up next, some words of wisdom from Hollywood legend Robert Evans. But first, an ad break.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. For instance, her first job was as a movie usher, and she would walk around with a flashlight and tell people to get their feet off the seat, and I just love hearing about it. Well, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother or your mom figure's life for years to come. And at the end, you get it all put together in a book. And I know I will be so happy to have that book on the shelf and be able to open it anytime I want and read a wonderful story about my mom.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, you'll save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/Hollywood. That's storyworth.com/Hollywood to save $10 on your first purchase.
Okay, Sarah, let's dive into our segment from the treadmill desk of, in which we discuss what's most pressing in our work psyches. And today, that's Robert Evans' advice to study success, not failure.
Yes. Now, for anyone who doesn't know, Robert Evans was an actor who became the youngest head of a major studio in 1967 when he took over Paramount. At the time, Paramount was in last place among the big nine studios, but Robert Evans took it to number one with hits like The Godfather, Love Story, and Chinatown.
Yes, and he is a total character. He wrote a book called The Kid Stays in the Picture that was also made into a documentary, and it was a hugely successful book. It's incredibly entertaining about his journey, you know, from childhood till, you know, adulthood and this crazy Hollywood career he's had. He literally is, his best friends are Jack Nicholson and Dustin Hoffman. So he's been there and done it all.
Yeah, I always think of him as that guy with those crazy kind of mirrored big glasses.
Yes, and a tan.
A tan, yes. So in his memoir, you are big on the Hollywood memoirs, Robert Evans said something that really struck you. He said, "At an early age, a man of great wisdom gave me the key to making it. You learn from success, kid, not failure. If you've only touched it once, a term paper, a temp job, hitting a homer, dissect it. Was it timing, focus, homework? Get to the core. Find out the whys, the hows. That's the key. Use it. Go with it. Don't be afraid. When you get your shot, then you'll be ready. Success ain't easy, kid, but the more you taste it, the easier it gets. No different with failure," the wise man smiled. "The more you taste it, the more you get it." Putting his finger to his lips, "Shh, don't spread it. It's tough out there. Keep it to yourself."
So I just thought this was fascinating because I feel like your whole life as we go through from school, work, everything, it's, oh, you learn from failure.
Right.
I don't feel like we ever talk about learning from success.
No, I've never heard this discussed as a concept before.
No, so I was like, well, this is fascinating.
Maybe this is what all the super successful people are talking about.
That's right. It's the secret. I know. Now that we know about it, Sarah, my God, we're unleashed.
Exactly. And what I like about it is it's like, he's like, study the small successes.
Yes.
Did you hit a homer? Did you, you know, finish your homework?
Yeah, I like that you can have a successful temp job.
Yeah, I successfully drove from here to there. Yay!
Yeah, and studying success is a more positive approach.
Yes.
You're going to feel better studying success than studying failure. It's like, where do you want to put your energy? Studying your own successes or your failures?
Right, and there are definitely things to learn from failures.
Of course.
But why not just like go embrace the things that you're doing right and do more of them?
Yeah. So is there a time when we've learned from success?
I mean, I think as writers, fortunately, we get a lot of feedback.
Yes.
We have a lot of opportunities to learn from both failure
yes,
and success. And I do think that that we've learned doing multiple pilots, as we have at this point. The things that have been the most successful are the things that have been just the most entertaining, not the best structured, not the best, you know what I mean? Which goes to our relentlessly entertaining mantra this development season. I think that's an example of learning from success.
Yeah, it's like you see what people respond positively to, and then we try to do that and more.
Yes. Well, and just in general as writers, you know, we're in writers' rooms all the time. And a lot of the time, especially me, because I have more anxiety in writers' rooms, I'll say something and it bombs, and then I feel terrible. Well, let that go.
Right.
I should be thinking about the time that I pitched something and it was great and do more of that. Like, that's what I should be analyzing and picking apart and being like, ah, okay, this was what was good about this pitch and this is why. I wish I had, you know, known this when we were on Angel.
Oh, yeah. That was a very intimidating writer's room. You remember my story about my squeaky voice trying to get an idea out.
Right, exactly.
And I mean, this is true. I mean, what I love about this advice from Robert Evans is that it applies to literally any profession and any part of life.
Yes.
I mean, it really does. It's like if you're, you know, a bank teller, you can learn from what was a positive interaction that you had with a customer and then recreate a similar kind of, you know, interaction with the next customer.
Yeah.
As opposed to just focusing on what you did wrong and trying to analyze it and improve it that way.
Or if you're in a relationship and your relationship ends, instead of thinking about all the ways in which the relationship was a failure, think about all the positive things that you got out of the relationship, all the ways in which you were a success or the relationship was a success, so that you can recreate that and have that be your starting point for your next relationship.
Yeah, that is like a groundbreaking notion, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, even just thinking about my own relationship with Adam, it's like a lot of times I will focus on what's wrong with it, and I would really be much better off focusing on what's right with it and trying to create more of what's right with it.
Well, that's how I feel about parenting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like I am constantly like, oh, I should have done this. I should have done that. Right. I shouldn't have been snappy. I should have laughed more. Instead, I should think about like, oh, we had a great snuggle this morning and we had such a good conversation on the way to school. Like, it just makes everything you're thinking about more positive. And then, you know, it's about adding positivity and naturally negativity falls away.
Yes. Creating more success in these things. And fascinating that Robert Evans said, the more you taste it, the easier it gets.
Yes.
And it's like, what do you want to taste, failure or success?
I want to taste success.
Me too. Especially in 2018, our year of expansion.
Yes. It's the best year of our careers.
Let's taste success. Let's just eat success.
Yes. Every day.
Yum, yum.
All right. Is there a time when you have learned from success? We want to hear about it. Email us at happierinhollywood@gmail.com. Okay, Liz, now it's time for Take a Hike, in which we talk about mental, physical, or spiritual health. And today it is mental health.
And bling.
Yes. One particular piece of bling that has been a huge factor in my mental health over the last 7 years. Liz, do you remember what we were doing 7 years ago about now?
Yes. we were making a pilot and it was not a fun experience. Nor was it a completed experience.
Yeah, exactly. It was really, it was challenging. I was in Canada.
Yeah, you were in Vancouver. I was here.
Working on the pilot. From there, you were in LA. So I was working with a life coach at the time who suggested that I get a ring to wear that would sort of remind me how I wanted to be in the situation. So one day on the way to like the production office, and you know, we stay at this hotel and then we don't have a car because we're in Vancouver, right? So the transpo guy, transportation. The transpo guy comes with the van to pick me up, and I'm like, is there like a Walmart here? Is there somewhere we can stop on the way? And we stopped at, I don't know if Canada has Walmarts or if it was just the Canadian version of a Walmart. And I went in and I got this little ring with three super fake diamonds on it. And I sort of assigned a meaning to each of the fake diamonds.
Okay, so what were the meanings?
The first one was, I cannot control anyone but me. The second one was, this is not my crazy. Mm-hmm. And the third one was, this too shall pass.
And it did pass because we got fired.
Yes.
Very unceremoniously.
And horribly. Yes. I was on the tech scout. You were still in LA. I was on the tech scout with like 40 crew members in a bus.
In the woods. Weren't you standing in the woods at the time?
In the woods. Yes. And you and Matt call. And I remember Matt being like, can you get somewhere private? Like, no, I can't go somewhere private. There are 40 people standing here around me. But I sort of like went off into a path in the woods and it was like, you'll be leaving the project.
What they always say is they want to continue without you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the phrase.
As they did.
As they did.
So I had to have, I literally, like, I hugged the director goodbye and got in a van, and they took me back to the hotel. And I, swiping tears off my face as I walked, there was a Tiffany's down the street. And I was like, I'm getting the good version of this ring and turning it into something else that I'm going to, you know, that's going to be meaningful for me moving forward. I walked down the street to Tiffany's. I get the sterling silver and, you know, tiny diamond chip version. It was my most dramatic ever treat yourself.
Yeah, I love that story. And I can I also add, I love that they were like, well, Sarah, there's no first class plane tickets back tonight, so you're going to have to go coach. And you were like, you know what? I'll just stay in this hotel and until there's a first class ticket.
Yeah.
Like, you're not flying me coach back from getting fired.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. So you hold up at the Sutton place until you
for
can
like
get
2 days.
Yes, because just on the principle of it, you were not going to fly coach back from getting fired.
Exactly.
And I appreciated that.
You know, it's a lot like when people put a rubber band around their finger to remind them to do something, except a ring is a longer lasting thing. So if you have something that you're going through that lasts a long time, the ring, you don't want to have a rubber band on your finger for 2 years, which is what the ring turned into for me, because then it became my kind of reminder ring when I was going through the fertility stuff.
And did you have the same meaning assigned to the little diamonds, or did you give them different meanings?
I gave them different meanings for fertility and really for everything since then. The little diamond chips stand for faith, action, and yes. So faith was, you know, it's, we talked about this earlier, it's a really hard process trying to have a baby. Sometimes, not all
for
the time.
For some people.
For some people. So I just reminded myself that I needed to have faith, but that faith alone would not work. I also had to take action.
Yes, and action is self-explanatory. Keep going, take action, do all the necessary steps. And then what does yes mean? I love, that's my favorite one, yes.
Yes was just to remind me to say yes to whatever happened.
Okay.
And along the way, yes to this procedure that I needed to have. Yes to driving across town to the doctor nonstop. And then, yes, just whatever the outcome was going to be, to have an open, positive attitude of yes. And that ring, I mean, it really got me through that. I still have the Walmart version, by the way, and I still have the Tiffany version. And faith, action, and yes are kind of my overriding life mantras. Now, Liz, do you have any jewelry that has this kind of significance for you?
Not exactly the same, although I love this. We need to go to Tiffany so I can get my own ring. But it's funny because, you know, I don't wear my wedding ring all the time and my engagement ring because largely because my fingers are a little bit fatter than they used to be. And so it's not as comfortable. But and I've talked about this on Happier, the podcast I co-host with my sister, Gretchen Rubin. My ring is like my lucky charm now. So if I have a day that I think is going to be a little bit tough, today, for instance, I'm wearing my wedding ring and engagement ring because we have a lot going on and I felt I needed a little boost of luck and
just, love.
And love. So it's kind of my lucky charm, even though most people wear their wedding ring all the time. To me, it means something when I put it on.
And of course, it doesn't have to be a ring.
Oh, no.
It could be a bracelet, a necklace. A guy could get a leather bracelet.
Yeah.
Just something to kind of help you stay in balance.
Yes. Having a physical and ever-present reminder can just be incredibly helpful. And it's subtle, so you can look at it any time and no one knows you're thinking, this is not my crazy.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
But now I'm thinking, because I had forgotten this whole story about your ring, that when I see you glance down at the ring during one of our tenser moments, I'm going to know what you're thinking.
I'm going, this is not my crazy.
You're busted.
Yeah, it definitely helps me stay balanced. It's my balance bling.
I love it. To our listeners, do you need some balance bling, the Walmart version or the Tiffany version? What would your diamonds or whatever you like stand for? We want to know. Email us at happierinhollywood@gmail.com or you can always send us a voice memo.
Up next, a Hollywood hack for your wrist. But first, a word from our sponsor.
I don't know about you, but we're always looking for ways to get our kids involved and give back in our local community. That's why we're excited to tell you about Student Visionaries of the Year, a campaign by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, which is the largest nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a world without blood cancers. Student Visionaries of the Year is a 7-week philanthropic leadership development program for high school students. Participants form strong teams and fundraise in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. I would love for Violet to do this program when she's in high school.
This program is transformative. It not only helps students develop valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship, not to mention it looks great on college applications, but most importantly, it's also a chance for them to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on blood cancer patients and their families. You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students. Now it's time for this week's Hollywood hack, more bling.
Does a motion sickness bracelet count as bling?
Well, I mean, I think our standards are low for what bling is. So, yes, today it does.
Okay.
Now, this came up because someone in our Facebook group, Kavitha, mentioned that she gets motion sick on her treadmill desk. She had bought a treadmill desk. She was all excited. And then she noticed that whenever she gets off, she feels really nauseous and dizzy.
Which, of course, we find just tragic.
Yes, because we're obsessed with everyone getting a treadmill desk. Yes. And I have never heard of that happening. It's never happened to me.
No, me neither. And I am sensitive. I do get motion sickness now. I used to not ever. And now whenever I'm on a boat, even if I sit on a swing and try and swing, I get motion sickness.
Wow.
So today's Hollywood hack is something called the Relief Band. It's on my favorite gifty website, The Grommet. Literally the day that Kavitha, we're probably pronouncing it wrong, sorry, posted this about the treadmill desk. I saw it on the Grommet, and it's a motion sickness bracelet that sends soothing pulses to your brain and stomach via the vagus nerve, which can help alleviate nausea by restoring your gastric rhythms. You'll feel the effect within minutes without using drugs.
Ooh, that's an impressive thing.
Yes. And Kavitha...
Kavitha.
And Kavitha also got lots of other great suggestions from the Happier in Hollywood Facebook crew.
So you're going to get this bracelet and use it on boats and in cars. I get horrible motion sickness only in cars.
Yeah, like in the back seat. Oh, my God. Yeah. So this is bling that makes your life better day.
I like it. Okay, so it's time for this week's celebrity sighting, which was really an up-close and personal sighting.
Yes.
It wasn't just a sighting. It was an interaction.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's Mary's. So, Mary, tell us who you interacted with this week.
None other than Kit Harington.
Sarah, are you going to hum the Game of Thrones
theme song? I can't possibly because my heart is pounding too fast. So what? We're sitting in our office, and Mary literally, like from down the hall, we hear, "Oh my God, you guys! I just walked Kit Harington upstairs."
And for anyone who doesn't know, which is hard to imagine, Kit Harington plays Jon Snow on Game of Thrones, and he's dreamy.
He's like the best. The best character on Game of Thrones.
Well, I would beg to differ, but I think Tyrion is the best character, but he is a damn good character.
And a lot of people would say Sansa.
Yes.
A lot of people would say Arya.
We could discuss this for hours.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But Kit Harington.
But who do you want to snuggle with? Kit Harington.
Okay, good point. So tell us what happened.
Yeah, so I was headed back to the building, and I see this guy kind of wandering around. I just see his curly black hair from behind, just looking lost. And I was like, I took a double take, like, ooh, is that who I think it is? And then he comes up to me and he goes, "Miss, can you show me to this place?" And then he shows his pass to the building and the room number. And I was like, "Oh my God, this is Kit Harington."
Well, and also he was going to Mandeville, right?
Yeah,
which you guys are working on the Marsha Clark project.
Yeah, so I was like, I know exactly where this is. And I did not acknowledge who he was at all. The whole time, so LA of me, but like I was talking about the weather. I was like, "It's raining. I forgot my umbrella today." And he was like, "Oh, I'm surprised anyone in LA owns an umbrella." And then I said, "Have a great day." And showed him to his place. But looking back, I wish I had said something clever, like, you know, he asked for directions and I say, you know nothing, Jon Snow, and walk away.
Yes. Although that would have been a little awkward, given the context of that relationship
and
what happened. But can I say I just appreciate your English accent, Mary?
Oh, I know.
It makes the story.
Yes.
So that's our second Game of Thrones sighting in the last little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, who do we want to see next?
Cersei?
Okay, yeah, okay. Mm. Cersei.
Okay.
Lannister.
All right, fingers crossed.
Okay. And that's it for this episode of Happier in Hollywood. Email us or send us a voice memo at happierinhollywood@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe if you haven't already. And if you like the podcast, give us a review in Apple Podcasts. It really does help new listeners find us.
Thanks to Mary for ushering Jon Snow safely to his destination and telling us about it. Next time, please usher him to our office.
Yes, that's the only mistake.
Thanks to our producer, Jennifer Lai. Also, thanks to Kristen Meinzer and Andy Bowers of Panoply. Thank you to Gretchen Rubin. Happier in Hollywood is part of the Onward Project.
Get in touch. I'm on Instagram at Liz Craft, and Sarah is at S. Fain. We also have a Facebook group. Search for Happier in Hollywood on Facebook to join the conversation.
Until next week, I'm Sarah Fain.
And I'm Liz Craft. Thanks for joining us. It's a fun job.
And we enjoy it.
Sarah, I still remember when we got fired, I was at my desk eating that really good green bean soup from that place.
Yes.
And I was like, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to eat this soup and I'm not going to be driven out of this office until I'm ready. And so I sat around in the office for like 3 hours.
Just making them uncomfortable.
Making everyone uncomfortable.
Well played.